This is The Record. I'm Ross Reynolds. America is aging rapidly. By 2030, the number of people 65 and older will almost equal the current population of New York, California, and Texas combined. One in five Americans will be 65 or older. Now, there's a lot of speculation about what this is going to mean, most of it negative. The Economist called baby boomers sponging boomers who will overwhelm the government safety net, drag down the economy, and prompt intergenerational warfare. Chris Farrell has a different view of what aging America will be like in his new book called Unretirement. He calls it a revolution in the making. You've heard Chris on Marketplace, where he's senior economics contributor. Welcome.
Well, thanks for having me.
Well, first of all, what do you mean by this term, unretirement?
All right, so we all know what retirement is. That means you stop working, right? You say goodbye to your colleagues for the last time, and that's it. And then you join the life of the patio culture, the RV,
golf,
all kinds of things. That's the image that we have. But unretirement is people rethinking this last third of life. And at some level, there's a component of continuing to work, to continuing to earn a paycheck. Now, it's not the 40, 50-hour work week. It's not continuing necessarily to stay where you are right now, you know, continuing to see the same people, continuing to work for the same boss, being told to do more with less. But it is that, you know, flexible work, part-time work, contract work, temp work, maybe even starting your own business. But this rethinking of life has work as a core of it, partially for the personal finances of it. I mean, it just, you know, a lot of us have managed to save. And so this obviously helps. And part of it is because, you know, a lot of us find our identity, our meaning from the skills, the experience, the knowledge that we picked up over the years. And it just turns out the boomers don't want to walk away from that forever.
Yeah, not to mention the social connections we feel in the workplace often. You're right, there are these two defining institutions of what you call unretirement, and one is the workplace. How will that change?
So I think one of the things is the workplace is really going to have to adjust to an aging population that wants to stay engaged. And right now, if you actually look at it, a majority of people who retire, quote unquote retire, actually do some kind of work. But that's not our image. That's not how we see it. And a lot of it right now is a DIY movement. So you kind of figure it out yourself and you tap into your network and you find something over here that you want to be doing that kind of intrigues you. And one of the things that I think corporations are going to do, or organizations are going to do, is create more ramps for people to phase into retirement, to bridge into retirement. So, for example, the federal government's starting a program, a phased retirement program, and it's really kicking in 2015, 2016. So you'll be able to work 20 hours a week, no more, and you can draw partially on your pension, and you agree to mentor 20% of your time while you're on the job. Now, I think if this works, which I think that it will, a lot of companies are going to look at this and say, well, you know what, this isn't a bad benefit, particularly with the aging of the population, the aging of the boomers, you got a slightly smaller generation behind. You know, maybe we don't want everyone to leave as quickly as they might.
Chris Farrell, you hear him on Marketplace, and he's talking to us about his new book. It's called Unretirement, How Baby Boomers Are Changing the Way We Think About Work, Community, and the Good Life. You write that the second defining institution of unretirement, as you call it, is entrepreneurial startups. Now, we don't usually associate those with gray-haired folks. We associate those with young people. Is that going to change?
It already has changed. So if you look at the Kauffman Foundation, and it's a foundation that follows entrepreneurship in the United States, so their data has 23% of new business formation in 2013 was the 55 to 64-year age group.
Wow, almost a quarter.
Almost a quarter. And that's up from 14% in 1996. And there's other data sets I've looked at, and they all have sort of the same trajectory, which is increasing formation of businesses by an older generation. And part of this has to do with age discrimination is real, right? I mean, so, but if you're going to start your own business, you know, typically you have some contacts, you're going to be solving problems, and they're just looking at you, who you are, what you can do, and you're not some sort of nameless person coming through the door and stopped by an algorithm. Part of it is, the other issue is, you know, you've had a dream. You've been thinking about it. Well, you know, you're not getting any younger. If you're going to do it, you might as well go ahead and do it now. A lot of these businesses are what we call Schedule C. businesses. You're self-employed, maybe have one or two employees. You probably have a lot of informal partnerships, people you come together on projects. But this is really growing. And part of it is the cost of starting your own business has really come down because of technology. I mean, you think about it, you have your home office. Technology has made it easier to do your accounting, to do your invoicing, all these things that in an earlier era, you kind of like had to hire people to help you out.
Well, also, I assume seniors have a lot more capital on hand sometimes to actually try something out with a new business.
Absolutely. So, and they're not taking, you know, they're not draining their retirement savings plan, their 401k or their 403b and risking that. But you're right. They do have some savings. They have some friends and family that they probably tap into. And they also have a network. And that's the most valuable asset of an older person is their network, the people they know.
Now, one big concern about our aging population, and we see this all the time when we look at the figures on what the average person has saved for some kind of retirement, it's paltry and certainly not enough to get them by, even with Social Security. So there's this big concern that people in old age are not going to be able to get by at all. Do you think this is a real concern?
It is a genuine concern. What is striking, though, is the effect of working longer, what that has on the household balance sheet, the household finances. So you're absolutely right. Now, part of it is, you know, it's very easy to say, oh, these boomers, you know, they couldn't resist the mall. They couldn't resist a credit card. And what it turns out is actually, if you look at it, a lot of it was they spend on the education of their children. And they spend up to buy a house because they wanted their kids to go to a good school. All that kind of, that's really much more the problem that a lot of families have had. Well, by the way, the kids are now out of the house and you may still be supporting them somewhat, but it's much easier to save. And working longer really does improve your finances. It means that you're not tapping into your savings or, you know, you might even be adding to your savings. And most importantly, it allows you to delay for taking for Social Security. And that Social Security benefit, taking it at age 70 versus age 62, it's more than 75% bigger for the typical worker. So really, the longer you can delay taking your Social Security and continue to work, the more your finances are going to improve. And it really has a dramatic effect on a lot of these numbers that we see all the time.
So a push to work a little bit longer for some bigger benefits at the end. But you do concede, Chris Farrell, that working longer may not be an option for the working poor. What will become of them?
Well, look. The people who in our society who are really in trouble are, as you say, the working poor. So they've had low income and they've never had an employer-sponsored retirement savings plan. They've never had an employer-sponsored health insurance plan. And yes, so can you reach 60 years old and physically and mentally burned out? My argument is that if a majority of boomers can continue to work, that the wealth that they'll create, their employers are going to be better off. There's going to be more taxes are going to be paid. The economy will be bigger. We have more than enough money to improve the support for the people who can't continue to work. We can make our social safety net, including Social Security, far more generous as opposed to this conversation we're having about we need to cut it back. We don't need to cut it back. We need to increase it. But what we really need to do is encourage more people to create incentives for more people to work longer. And then a lot of good benefits flow from that.
Chris Farrell is talking about unretirement, the idea that in the last third of life, people might be working a little bit longer for some good benefits. The subtitle of Unretirement, How Baby Boomers Are Changing the Way We Think About Work, Community, and the Good Life. And Chris, I know some people, maybe you've even encountered them on this book tour, are going to hear that title and think, here they go again, those egotistical boomers proclaiming their triumphant impact for greater good yet again.
Yes, and I almost took the term boomers out of the book and just put it older workers and aging entrepreneurs. But, you know, we are talking about the boomer generation, and is a large generation. It has changed the, you know, changed the school system. It changed the workplace. There's a lot of things. But one of the things that I think has really changed is how the boomer generation, remember, was it Tom Wolfe called it the me generation, right? And that's kind of the image that it's just stuck to the boomers. It's becoming the us generation. This is a lot of conversations, grassroots movement. There's a lot of nonprofits that are being formed about this unretirement. There's a growing grassroots conversation about unretirement. And it's actually people connecting, and that's part of this community effort. But here's the main thing. Like boomers or not, the real effect of what we're talking about, this unretirement, is not on the boomers. There's a lot of experimentation. It's kind of like an improv act. And, you know, some of it's going to succeed, some of it's not. But the real impact is on my 22-year-old son. So when my 22-year-old son is in his 50s or 60s, he's going to have a very different image of what is the good life and what is he going to be doing in the last third of life? And then as that feeds back, how is it going to affect the way people think about their careers over a lifetime? Because if you're going to be working longer and that becomes part of your expectation, I think you can take greater risks throughout your lifetime, and you can try starting your own business. And we know a lot of businesses fail. And then you can go work for the nonprofit sector, and you work for the for-profit sector, you go work for the government. And I think this is one of the exciting effects of this whole experimentation, this rethinking of life. It's sort of like, yes, it's unretirement, but it's how unretirement affects the younger generation is the exciting part.
Well, in fact, unretirement is basically people who are older working a little bit longer. Yet you compare some of the changes that might bring to the changes that took place in the workforce when women began to enter it in the last half of the 20th century, which really changed our society. Why do you think it's going to be that big of a change?
Part of it is because age discrimination is really real. And, you know, no one goes, hey, you know, gray hair and creativity, I mean, they just go together, right? So if you say, we want some innovative people, automatically going to think about young. And, you know, my argument is that a lot of older workers aren't given the opportunity to be creative because the assumption is they aren't creative. It's a stereotype, and that stereotype needs to be broken down. And over the next three decades, it's going to be broken down. Just as with the women's movement, there's a lot of discussion about women can't do this, minorities can't do that, and that's been breaking down over time. So this is just part of that breaking down of stereotypes that are holding people back that are simply wrong.
Now, is unretirement, as you describe it, Chris Farrell, just a U.S. scenario? Are we seeing in other countries that are maybe facing the crisis of aging that's much more serious, like Japan and European nations, are they also moving to this?
They are. What's really striking is of the major industrial nations over the past decade, if you look back, the 65-plus, they're showing increases in people continuing to work. So this is part of a national conversation because we are aging as a planet. You know, if you look at China, South Korea, you know, they have very aging populations, and they're really interested in this subject, in this topic. Japan has the oldest population in the industrialized world, and they're doing a lot in this area. So part of it is it's a very exciting movement about how to rethink old age, not just here in the United States, but also going on in Europe, going on in Japan, and will increasingly be going on in places like China.
How old are you, Chris Farrell?
I am 61. And I still find that hard to say and believe, but it is true.
But is this thinking kind of permeated your plans for your future?
Well, it does. You can't help but, you know, you talk to people and what they've been doing and their struggles and then how they, you know, kind of figure it out. And you can't, oh, you know, I could do that. That's kind of, well, that's kind of cool. And yet what I keep coming back to is I really like what I'm doing. And so it kind of reinforces what I'm doing now. But it is really, you know, one of the things that we underestimate is how creative people are. And we think that creative people are this little group over here and not the average person. And actually, the average person is pretty creative. And people are coming up. So it gives you just one example, which is something that I would never do. So I'm on Minnesota Public Radio. Guy calls in. He says, I'm having a great retirement. I'm a driver. And he says, you know, I drive and I get to talk to people and, you know, and then when I decide it's time to visit the grandkids, I just call him up, say I'm gone for 3-4 weeks. Then he comes back, calls him back up. Now, to me, the thought of being with somebody, having to talk to them and driving a car, this is a horror. I can't even believe this. But, you know, he'd come up with a solution. And I would not have thought about that. Yeah. That's not the solution where you put a resume in. That's not a solution where I'm going to do what I was doing. It's something completely different from what he was doing before. But he was engaged. He got the talk. And it gave him flexibility.
Chris, you were telling me that you're touring around the country talking about your book, Unretirement, and you're getting some pretty tough questions. What's one of the toughest you've gotten?
Well, the toughest question, because there is no answer right now, which is, what about the long-term unemployed? All right, this is all great, but what about the long-term unemployed? And there is no facile answer. There is no simple answer when it comes to the issues that the long-term unemployed are dealing with. And our economy is still not strong enough. You know, the unemployment rates come down, but nonetheless, it hasn't come down enough where, you know, there's still a lot of people who are on the sidelines who are genuinely discouraged. The other thing is, you mentioned, you know, what is a tough question is, you know, what about the people who have been, you know, just doing a tough job? And, you know, the notion of continuing to work.
Their bodies are broken down. They're demoralized.
They want to run. One of the things that, though, I've been really struck by is in this whole unretirement, it is not, only for college-educated white-collar workers. The dividing line is skill. So if you talk to electricians, incredibly skilled. Now, their bodies do give out for many electricians. I mean, there comes a point where going up a ladder and holding, you know, all this equipment over your head, you know, your body's not going to do it. But like electricians, they go get a certificate and like they're really good estimators on commercial projects or various projects. So what you're finding is in skilled labor, blue collar labor, there's a lot of this going on too. And in fact, historically, skilled blue collar labor has always lived in the unretirement world. It's really now more in the white-collar world that this is something new.
Chris Farrell, it's been a pleasure.
Thanks a lot.
Chris Farrell, you hear him on Marketplace, and his new book is called Unretirement, How Baby Boomers Are Changing the Way We Think About Work, Community, and the Good Life. This is The Record on KUOW. I'm Ross Reynolds.